You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And yes, this is episode 166 of Columbia Calling. We're coming into the end of the year. Yes, it's December, folks, and it's getting harder and harder to pin down my interviewees. You'll be with me this week, but we'll do a shorter show so as not to bore you. You don't get fed up with my voice over the airwaves, in your car, in your homes, your iPods, etc. But what can I say? This is a serious note, episode 166. It's the first podcast recorded since that tragic accident that occurred in La Union, just outside of Rio Negro, Medellin, Colombia, where 71 people tragically lost their lives in that air crash. The La Mia Bolivian plane carrying members of the Chapecoense Brazilian football team. It was a tough week because I had to report on that for the international news and also do TV reports for DWTV in Germany on that. It has been quite an emotional week on that. And here at Columbia Calling, you know, our deepest sympathies and thoughts go out to those who have lost friends and loved ones, people they've ever met, people they've known. I mean, especially in this accident, because it just really hit home, didn't it? And it does seem to point to a human error that created most of the issues there. Of course, the conflict of interest in a pilot also being a 30% shareholder in a company. So therefore, there is a definite conflict of interest, but we don't want to get into that. If you read Spanish, can I direct you to the El Tiempo Colombian newspaper, the article they wrote on Sunday past? It's about the most, it's the best explanation of what took place, of what happened, and why this occurred. And it is pretty dreadful. And while this happened, while this was happening, you see, the government, I don't know if they took advantage of the bad news, but the government were able to push the peace agreements through Congress. Just while it was going on, and it really almost didn't make the top news in the country, but they were able to ratify the peace agreement in the Congress. So this is what episode 166 is going to be about. I'm only going to be here for, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, I think, on this week's episode, because I don't want to bore you with this, but I think it's worthwhile talking about what has been passed and what the peace agreement means. So I've got some things noted down, and you know, I do study this. I have been an academic now for quite some time, and certainly have studied the conflict in Colombia and of course the peace negotiations. You know where I stand on this, but they did ratify this revised peace agreement with the FARC. So some thoughts about this. So over 2 days last week, both chambers of Colombia's Congress debated and then voted to ratify the government's revised peace accord with the FARC. That's the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. That's the larger guerrilla group in the country. Both votes were unanimously in favor, with, of course, abstentions from opponents, principally from ex-president Álvaro Uribe's Democratic Center Party and some Conservative Party members. The vote was the substitute for a second national plebiscite referendum on the accord. As you'll remember, on October the 2nd, Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos convened a national plebiscite to ratify the accord's first version, and voters surprisingly rejected it, but only by a 0.5 percentage point margin. Now, there's all sorts of issues in that, and you've heard them from me, and you can read them elsewhere, so I'm not going to get into those. Colombian law does not require peace accords to be approved by a plebiscite. President Juan Manuel Santos chose to take this step step because a popular vote would have conferred more legitimacy on the accord, and this took 4 years to negotiate. After the plebiscite defeat, the government and the FARC made adjustments to the accord, incorporating many of its opponents' suggestions. These adjustments did not go far enough to satisfy Uribe and some of the other critics who remain opposed. But the Santos government is reluctant to submit the revised accord to a second plebiscite. Firstly, because in this year of unpredictable election results, just look around us, its passage is not assured. And secondly, because organizing another plebiscite would take about 2 months, extending the legal limbo in which the FARC's membership finds itself and straining a fragile ceasefire arrangement. So it needs to be pushed through. It needed to be pushed through. The Colombian government and FARC disagree about what the accord calls D-Day, the first day in which guerrillas must begin a six-month process of gathering into 27 zones and turning over their weapons to a UN mission. 5 days after this D-Day, the accord states, all FARC guerrillas are to begin reporting to the village-sized concentration zone. So they've got to, you know, hike across the country to places where they have been, you know, assigned positions. The accord appears to indicate that D-Day was the day the final accord was signed. So that would be Thursday, November the 24th. But neither side is holding to that. The government believes D-Day is now, the day after the accord's ratification. So it's a couple of days ago. The FARC insists that its members will not begin to demobilize and disarm without a guarantee that they won't be subject to summary arrest for having rebelled. It wants a political crimes amnesty law absolving all members of the crime of sedition to be approved first, or at least formally presented and moving rapidly through Congress. Only then, in the guerrillas' view, will D-Day arrive. The text of that law, which the Congress must approve, is embedded in the peace accord. So this is why Santos is pushing for this, you know, the fast tracking, okay? Congress must approve a series of other laws to implement the accord, establishing a transitional justice system, guaranteeing protections for opposition, political movements, carrying out a new rural development policy, and amongst other things. But the amnesty law is the one that must come first, since the FARC won't even start turning in its arms without it. In the meantime, it is dangerous to keep waiting. And this is what I believe as well. At present, arrest warrants against FARC members have been suspended and a bilateral ceasefire with UN monitoring is in place. But that ceasefire is fragile, as evidenced by a November 13th combat incident in Bolivar department, which left two guerrillas dead. And of course, that came to an end where they decided that both sides were at fault. Meanwhile, it is unrealistic to expect the FARC's entire membership to remain docile in its clandestine encampments with no certainty about their future for a long period. During an extended limbo, dissidences might emerge within the group. Even if that does not happen, every day of uncertainty could see a steady trickle of FARC members abandoning their encampments, perhaps to pursue lives of criminality no longer available when the moment comes to demobilize and when that finally arrives. And even if that doesn't happen, each day of delay is another in which other criminal groups can establish a stronger foothold in territories of historic FARC influence, increasing the likelihood of further violence. The process is unlikely to withstand much more uncertainty. So when will D-Day truly happen? Here are three potential timetables, depending on an upcoming decision from Colombia's Constitutional Court, which was already reviewing challenges to the plebiscite law. It's the Legislative Act for Peace, which the Congress passed in July. This decision could come as early as Monday. And Monday passed, but although we don't know, there's no fixed timetable. So point one, congressional ratification with fast-track legislative authority. The July 2016 law establishing the plebiscite stated that if the accord is approved by the ratification of the people, the laws resulting from it may be approved with fewer rounds of congressional voting and the possibility of passing laws in a matter of a few weeks. Colombians, borrowing from English, call this accelerated legislative process fast track. Now, this is what they're all pushing for. The government and its majority coalition in Congress are likely to pursue this path now. This is what we're seeing. Beginning debate on the political crimes amnesty law via fast track. The amnesty could be formally presented in Congress next week, and either approved or nearing approval by the time the current legislative session ends on December 16th. That's quite soon, isn't it? December 16th. This would then allow the FARC to begin demobilizing. This process, though, risks being nullified by the coming Constitutional Court decision. Now, I think of point two. There's another plebiscite with a fast track, and this is about 2 to 3 months until a D-Day. So the Constitutional Court may decide that the fast track option is only valid after the accord's approval by the plebiscite, adopting a strict definition of ratification by the people to mean ratification directly and not through the people's elected representatives. If so, then this week's congressional ratification would not be good enough to allow the amnesty law and other accord implementation laws to go via fast track. This, in fact, is the recommendation of the Ponencia, the first draft decision proposed by one of the justices, and that was submitted last Monday. The Ponencia is not the final word, and Colombian media reports indicate that a majority of justices may be in favor of revising it to maintain fast-track authority. But if the justices agree with the Ponencia, then Colombia's government might need to go through with a second plebiscite in order to preserve the fast-track. The last plebiscite took a little less than 2 months to organize. So if we assume a court decision in early December, a plebiscite in February, a yes vote, and an amnesty law a few weeks after that, then the FARC might begin to demobilize in late February or early March. It won't be easy, but the ceasefire and the FARC's command and control might be able to withstand this delay. But, you know, the debate is up for this. It's impossible to predict whether a second plebiscite might pass. However, one of the opposition's strongest arguments no longer makes sense today. Many no voters claimed that while they weren't opposed to peace, they wanted a better accord. Now, a new accord has been negotiated, and the likelihood of going back and negotiating a third one is zero. A second plebiscite would be a starker choice between peace and renewed war. That's very true. Now look at point three. Congressional ratification without fast track, 6 months to a year until D-Day. If the court insists on a second plebiscite to enable fast track, Colombia's government may decide not to risk a second rejection. This would leave the Congress forced to pass the amnesty law and all other accord implementation laws through its regular legislative procedures. These procedures are lengthy, 8 debates over many months. These debates and votes could stretch on into June or July, and the Constitutional Court's process for reviewing them could drag on for months after that. By the second half of next year, meanwhile, Colombia will be nearing the launch of campaigning for March 2018 legislative and May 2018 presidential elections, creating a climate in which even the smallest steps toward implementation will be politicized. It's unlikely that the ceasefire and the FARC's ability to maintain a large force in clandestinity without losing much of its membership can last this long. We don't want it to be politicized, do we? We don't want it to become a presidential debate. So the peace dividend. The most immediate impact is on Santos himself and his ability to govern for the rest of his term. 2016 was set up to be the most important of Santos's career, with a historical peace deal followed by a much-needed structural tax reform. Following the referendum defeat, there was a danger that the government would be too weak to deliver fiscal change. Edward Glossop from the UK-based economics consultancy Capital Economics, and I quote him here, he says, if he felt that the tax reform bill that Santos's government had submitted is impressive and would help fix the country's fiscal deficit. I'm not entirely on board with this, but then, these are experts. Now, Santos's quick triumph with the peace deal should leave him in a stronger political position. Another impact of the new peace deal is on Colombia's country brand. Sophisticated investors and Colombia analysts know that in reality, the country has been a safe place to do business for the best part of a decade. However, The symbolic act of signing a peace agreement will help those investors that hadn't got the message. You know, I'm one of these people who has invested here. I invested time, money, you know, everything. I've seen it. Colombia can be done. Colombia's, but if we go back to the, what I was talking about, Colombia's battles with the guerrillas and the related drug wars have been well documented, and a peace deal will give Colombia a chance to recast its image to a wider audience. And over the long term, that will help secure greater flows of foreign investment. We're not there yet, though. One problem with this latest deal is that it wasn't passed by the public, but by politicians. This could weaken long-term support for its implementation if there are problems in the future. Moreover, by choosing to get approval from legislators instead of a new referendum, Santos will now need to create the individual laws needed to bring in the agreement into force. And that could take several months. Finally, the deal with the FARC was the most important peace process, but there are also parallel talks with another guerrilla group, the National Liberation Army, or the ELN, the Ejército de Liberación Nacional. But despite these qualms, the ability of the Santos government to quickly secure and pass an improved deal is impressive and means, and in my opinion, that his Nobel Peace Prize now looks well earned. I know that everyone listening is not perhaps completely in agreement with what I'm saying. I just, you know, we all have a right to an opinion. I like listening to opinions. If you want to pass your opinion across, please send me an email at columbiacalling@gmail.com, you know, a hateful tweet at Columbia Calling, and so on and so forth. We're on Facebook too. But we are at an important crossroads at the end of this year, 2016, which truly has been the annus horribilis, you know, in anyone's mind. I really don't think that anyone out there really doesn't think this hasn't been just a dreadful year. We are on the cusp of something great here in Colombia, despite all of our misgivings and despite the doubts that we may have. Surely this has to be a move in the right direction. That's me for today. That's all I'm going to talk about. I'm going to leave you with this, a shortened version of Colombia Calling for this episode 166. As always, get in touch. I do enjoy receiving your emails. I do enjoy the retweets. I do enjoy everything. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. I hope I've been able to explain a little bit about the peace dialogues, the peace agreements here in Colombia, a little bit of the issues at stake. And of course, I will be back next week. I do have some interesting people in the pipeline as we wind down this year, 2016. May it come to an end. Thank you again for listening. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McPaul. Bye-bye.